God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Dr. Michael Curtis, author of the new book, Should Israel Exist, returns for another program based on the insightful information in the hardback book. Dr. Larry Spargimino will be visiting with Dr. Curtis. As we mentioned yesterday, Dr. Curtis is a distinguished professor emeritus of political science at Rutgers University. In addition to his years there, he has taught at Yale, Cornell, Oberlin College, Hebrew University, Tel Aviv University, and the University of Bologna. Brother Larry, why are we having Dr. Curtis on the program?
Thank you, Jerry, and greetings once again to all in our listening audience. We have him on to give us all of the information because we know that there is so much misinformation and disinformation. There is a new anti-Semitism. In fact, Dr. Curtis discusses that in his book. So this is very, very fitting that we could get into these issues and have someone who is a thoroughgoing credential scholar to give us the truth, historical, geographical, and just help us to understand all of these important issues in the right and proper way. Dr. Curtis, thank you so much for being with us again.
It's a pleasure. Nice to be here.
As we pick up, I think a question that often comes up is this. Tell us about the Palestinians and, quote, their current plight. You know, we often hear that the state of Israel is occupying Palestinian territory, as though the Israelis were some kind of interlopers or invaders. Is that correct? Are the Palestinians the original inhabitants of the land, or is there some more that we should know about?
No, it is not correct. And, of course, it's a very complex situation. I mentioned yesterday in the broadcast that the land for centuries, in fact, since the sixth century on until 1920, was controlled by the Ottoman Empire, by Turkey. It then became under the jurisdiction of Britain from 1922 on. Now, what was this time? The individuals living there were Arabs and Jews. The Arabs called themselves part of the Arab nation. There was no such thing as a Palestinian identity, a separate self-determination entity at that time. In fact, in the arguments that were made in the early years, the Arabs called themselves part of southern Syria. There was no such thing as a Palestinian state. There never was a Palestinian state. There was a Jewish state going back to the time of King David and King Solomon, but there was never a Palestinian state. Now, Jews came into this area, which was under the Ottoman Turkish control and then the British control, but it was a disputed land. The United Nations General Assembly resolution, which we discussed last time, November 1947, called for the partition. The partition was done. Israel accepted that area, which was to be given to a Jewish state. The Arabs refused to accept theirs. Now, as a result of the war, which was the cause of five Arab states invading the state of Israel, Israel expanded its territory to some extent and therefore established lines. Now, the lines are not borders. The lines are ceasefire lines. There's no borders yet which have been established. They have to be established by peaceful negotiations. In 1947, as a result of the Six-Day War, Israel occupied the West Bank territory. Now, why is it called the West Bank? It's because Jordan, the Kingdom of Jordan, occupied this area from 1949 until 1967. The area east of the Jordan is technically the East Bank. The area west of the Jordan, which is where Palestinians now live, they call it the West Bank, which is the name which now is the general term for it. Now, the Palestinian conscious and identity did begin to develop, and therefore there's a group of individuals who call themselves Palestinians, some of whom live in the state of Jordan and elsewhere. But as a result of the various negotiations that have taken place over the last 20 years, I won't go into them one by one, the area of the West Bank is divided. Part of it is under the control of the Palestinian Authority, which was established by negotiations with Israel, and part of it is under military control of the Israeli, and will be given back to the Palestinians whenever the negotiations have been successful. So far, of course, they're not taking them. What is their plight? The plight is that they are under the control of their own authority. There are certain handicaps and problems that are developed, but they are not impoverished. They are not under some dire, cruel regime. In Arab countries, you see, the citizens are under various forms of control. Women have very little rights and so on. In Israel itself, there is a 20% of the population are Arabs, Palestinian Arabs, and they have the same rights, equal political and social rights as Israeli Jews have. In the West Bank, there are differences, but the differences, and it's important to remember, let's use the terminology, the differences are not distinctions. There are differences everywhere among human beings and in states, and it may well be that the life that West Bankers are leading are not as satisfactory as they like. But this is largely the result of their refusal to participate in negotiations, to get down to the table and deal with it. Now, of course, there are problems. There are real problems. There's a problem of Jerusalem. There are a problem of where boundaries should be established. And there are problems of the refugees. Now, let's stay with this just for a moment in answer to your question. Where do the refugees come from? The answer is as a result of the 48-49 war, and then some from the 67 war. No one will, there'll be no full agreement on how this came about and so on. No doubt some Israeli authorities, military authorities in the heat of battle, got rid of some Palestinians in the area. But most of it, and I point out in my book, that most of the refugees result from Arab authorities, their own leaders, telling them to go and to leave in the hope that they will come back when Israel was defeated. And so the Palestinian refugee problem, contrary to their own narrative and contrary to much of the thinking of the problem, is the consequence of Arab behavior, the unwillingness of the Arabs to reach an accommodation and agreement. And it's a problem that has to be resolved, and one can formulate compromises by which it can be resolved. But that's the state of affairs. It's a sore point. But I think it has to be reiterated again and again that it was not due to Israeli authority, to Jewish authority, except in a very minor way. The point is that the actions, the policies of Israel are not the basic root cause of the conflict, now the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, nor are the actions of Israel responsible for instability and conflict in the Middle East. That instability, the unwillingness of the non-Israelis to solve the problem, and the use made of it, of the Palestinian issue by Arab states, is what I discuss in the book. Then I kind of argue the Israeli policies are not responsible for the persistence of the Palestinian refugee problem, which is much more the result of the indifference of Arab states and especially of the operation of the organization which is called the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, which essentially is running a welfare state for Palestinian camp refugees.
This has been very significant, I think, because one of the sticking points in the Arab-Israeli conflict is the so-called right of return. And this has evoked a great deal of sympathy in the minds of outsiders. But the Israelis are not to blame for this problem. And I think that's very, very significant because they're often cast in a very dark light. Another area, and I know we're just covering things left and right, but as you well know, Zionism is often perceived as racism. And of course, you point out in your book that Jews have fought apartheid and racism in Africa, that there are three African nations that have issued commemorative postal stamps, I think Gambia, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Well, where does this whole idea of come from when they equate Zionism with racism? What is the foundation of this nonsensical idea?
The foundation was essentially the argument of the Soviet Union in relationship to with the Arab countries at the time to find ways in which Israel could be condemned and universally condemned. As I say, one of the principal factors stemming from World War II was the insistence on human rights. The human rights should be observed everywhere. The argument of the Soviet Union was to overcome this, to end any kind of influence of the United States and Britain in the area. And so they devised this concept of Zionism as a racist organization. And it's they, that is the Soviet Union, together with the Palestinians, the Arabs, and some countries from what being called the third world countries, the developing countries, that introduced the resolution in the United Nations General Assembly that Zionism was a form of racism and racial discrimination. The problem was that this was, and it was passed by a considerable majority, that this was then taken up by all kinds of other organizations and therefore propagated as if this were a valid truth. And this has gone on. And indeed, it's that concept and the following one which led to me writing the book when Israel was referred to as an apartheid state. Now, we know the horrors of the former South African state, which was apartheid. And as you just said, the Jews helped in the elimination. In fact, the main leaders, the white leaders of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa were Jews. And one is conscious of that. So it was a double blow when this was argument. I find it very distressing that a celebrated character like Archbishop Desmond Tutu should have referred to Israel, who is conscious of the Jewish contribution to the ending of apartheid in his own state, who refers to Israel as an apartheid state because of its handling of the West Bank right now. So it's one which is constantly repeated, and repeated most recently in the so-called Durban conferences, the third of which was held in New York last September, although it did not issue the apartheid word, but it still referred to racist states and so on. So this has gone on. In my book, I deal with a number of chapters dealing with all these charges, the charges of Israel as a racist state, as a colonial state, as an imperialist state, and as an apartheid state. All of these are fallacious, and I point out the inaccuracies and the falsehoods in making this claim and the way in which international pressure is done. In addition to that, of course, there's the denial by the Arabs and others of the Jewish people's right to national self-determination. Self-determination and the Jewish historical connection to Palestine. So Israel is not a colonial power, nor did it launch a campaign to propel Palestinian Arabs to move from their homes. They were simply coming in and returning to its ancient homeland.
Right. We're going to pause very, very briefly. Brother Jerry is our announcer. Jerry, how can our listeners get their own copy of Should Israel Exist?
The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Or go online. The website address is swrc.com on the Internet. The 350-page hardback book is offered for a gift of $30 in the U.S., $33 in Canada. Contact us right away for your copy. Here again is Dr. Spargimino.
Thank you, Brother Jerry. Let's get back to our interview. I know just before our quickie promo, you've got a section there showing on, I'm looking at page 74, how there have been some really ludicrous charges that, for example, the Mossad was behind attacks by sharks on tourists at Egyptian Red Sea resorts, that a vulture detained in Saudi Arabia was an Israeli spy, and that President Mubarak...
You know, next week there's going to be a resolution introduced in the United Nations General Assembly how the Israeli conspiracy has prevented the New York Yankees from winning the World Series.
Well, now you're kidding. You're pulling my leg, aren't you? Not at all, probably.
But it would be not unexpected if this were introduced and got a large majority.
Right, right. It's very, very sad.
Could refer to the Boston Red Sox also.
Well, you know, Michael, it...
Well, what you said, it's totally nonsensical, these charges that they made, and yet they're believed by so many people.
Yes, it's like gospel truth, you know. I've heard it somewhere.
The Habima group in London, which I mentioned in yesterday's broadcast, as if they were the emissaries of the Jewish state to condemn everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Michael, at one time, and this is kind of perplexing to me, but at one time I thought the Holocaust deniers would become an extinct race, you know, dead as the dodo. But actually, I keep on hearing denials of the Holocaust by some so-called reputable people. And of course, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is one of the great infamous or maybe famous Holocaust deniers. If you were to meet a Holocaust denier, what would you say in about 2 minutes just to pull the rug from the carpet from under his feet?
That there's an insane asylum to which you want to go. And I can suggest a doctor who might take care of you. I mean, that's not worth discussing. Unfortunately, it's believing, and it's very distressing.
Yes.
These stereotypes, this nonsense just goes on. You know, there was a meeting in the Hungarian parliament, the parliament in Hungary, which brought up again the blood libel accusation that Jews were killing innocent children in order to get their blood to bake matzahs from Passover. Now, this is the Hungarian parliament. At the beginning of the war, there were about 750,000 Jews in Hungary. 550,000 were killed in Auschwitz and elsewhere. For this garbage to be repeated is just unforgivable. But it just goes on.
Well, now, one of the big lies, I think, and a lot of people are confused about it, is the protocols of the Elders of Zion. You know, we can't talk about anti-Semitism without talking about this. Tell us the truth about the protocols.
That was a forgery designed by the Tsarist, the secret police in Russia at the time. It was based on a book, a French book that was published in the middle of the 19th century, and whole extracts were taken from it. The thrust of which is to say that there were a group of Jews, I've forgotten the number in the book, maybe 20 Jews, who were meeting in a cemetery to plot taking over the world. And this was circulated and became very prominent, the basis of anti-Semitism. Now, one thing you should realize that in Saudi Arabia, that book is still being distributed in an Arabic version. So that the lies, the forces, and the nonsense still goes on. It's a forgery has been established. One knows you can the stuff in this book from the French book, which was written by a man named Maurice Joly in French, and see that it's almost a parody. But it was written for Zionist political reasons, which we won't go into. There were differences in the Zionist hierarchy at the time. But unfortunately, it is still reprinted and still goes on. Now, in relationship to what I said a moment ago with the blood libel case against it, we have a few years ago the Syrian Minister of Defense. Syria is not the country not most notable for human rights, but the Syrian Minister of Defense introduced a statement that the State of Israel was responsible for killing Christians and using their blood. And so it never stops.
Never stops.
It never stops. And it's incumbent upon you and your friends and you, your kind to make clear that this is nonsense.
Yes. Well, a question that comes up, in fact, it came up in the first interview, but I didn't get around to it. Do you think, Michael, that the violence, the human rights abuses that we're seeing in Syria, just unbelievable, the murderous threats of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, do you think that these might in some way show the international community that Israel is really not the bad guy? Do you think people are going to have their eyes opened up, or are they so blinded and so filled with hatred that this is not going to, you know, open their eyes at all?
I'm afraid the latter is true. In my book, I spend a couple of pages listing some of the gross violations of humanity in countries all over the world, and nothing has been done. Let's take what I regard as one of the worst organizations, the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva. It meets most of its resolutions, something between two-thirds and three-quarters of its resolutions are spent condemning the violations of human rights by Israel. Now, there are 193 nations in the United Nations. Are we to believe that in 192 nations of the world there are no violations of human rights? I mean, it's that absurd that there's concentration there. Moreover, I mean, Israel is now subjected to kind of unwarranted discriminatory calls for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against it, which are really all attempts to legitimize and eliminate the state. I think that's the basis of the argument. Get rid of the state of Israel. End it. This is the Arab argument. It's the argument of those who support it, in essence. And some of it stems from the modern kind of thought, the worst of which is what I've called cultural relativism, the belief that what other countries do is equally valid to what is done in democratic countries. I believe this is a pernicious argument and ought to be ended, and that responsible people, intelligent people, academics, writers, and so on, should say that this is not true, not valid.
Well, thank you so much for that. That's really a closing statement. So thank you so much for these wonderful interviews. Brother Jerry, come to the mic once again. Tell our listeners how they can get their own copy of this book. It should be a reference work that everyone who wants to know the truth about the Middle East and about Israel has on their shelf. Should Israel Exist? Brother Jerry, come to the mic.
Thanks, Brother Larry. The 350-page book is available by phone, mail, or the Internet. Number to call is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, P.O. Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008. And the website address is swrc.com. Get your copy of the 350-page book, Should Israel Exist?, in appreciation of a $30 contribution in the United States, $33 for listeners in Canada. In his book, the well-known political scientist Dr. Michael Curtis exposes the attempts by the United Nations, the Islamic conspiracy, and the international community to destroy Israel. If you love America and Israel, this is a book you'll definitely want to read and heed. Don't wait to get it. Contact us today for your copy of Should Israel Exist? You may also want the two programs in this series on CD. They're available for an offering of $14 in the U.S., $15 in Canada. Give us a call at 1-800-652-1144. This is Station Identification Month, which means we'd certainly appreciate it if you would let us know the call letters of the station you're listening to right now. Stay tuned now for today's Bible in the News report over most of these stations, and join Brother Hutchings tomorrow as he begins a lengthy series of broadcasts with J.D. Grush, producer of a new DVD entitled Armageddon, The Hiding Place, and the Mount of Olives Mystery. It'll be here on your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Welcome to today's Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. We report on a recent news story and relate it to the Bible. Today's speaker is Dr. Larry Spargimino.
Christian Palestinianism is another name for the growing anti-Israel crusade being waged by a number of Christian authors and speakers who are supportive of replacement theology. Its major tenets include the belief that Israel is an occupier of Palestinian territory, and that Christians must do all that they can to refute the alleged errors of Christian Zionism.
Bethlehem Bible College in PLO-administered territory organized a five-day conference held in March of 2010. Representative organizations included the World Council of Churches, the World Evangelical Alliance, and the Lausanne Committee for World Evangelization, and several other similar organizations. There was a second Christ at the Checkpoint conference in March of 2012. Dr. Paul Wilkinson, Ph.D. and Associate Minister of the Hazelgrove Full Gospel Church in London, England, has produced two important documents dealing with this issue. One is titled, Prophets Who Prophesy Lies in My Name, Christian Palestinianism and the Anti-Israel Crusade. The second is titled, The Church at Christ Checkpoint, a response to the second Christ at the Checkpoint conference in Bethlehem, March of 2012. Dr. Wilkinson is a credentialed scholar holding a Ph.D. from the prestigious Manchester University. Dr. Wilkinson's research will be cited in this report.
Though the Christ at the Checkpoint conferences are billed as bringing, quote, hope in the midst of conflict, close quote, it is doubtful if they do that. Rather, these conferences promote injustice through historical and biblical revisionism. Their goal is the destruction of the Jewish state and the name of God. Their theological premise is Gary Burgess' theory of messianic fulfillment, which is just another name for replacement theology, though Dr. Burge rejects that term.
The underlying political agenda of the conference was very clear from the start. The opening address of the second conference was given by the Prime Minister of the Palestinian National Authority, Dr. Salam Fayyad, who was formerly the Minister of Finance under the notorious Yasser Arafat. Fayyad opened the conference by extending an invitation for all to see, quote, what it is like for Palestinians to be living under occupation, close quotes. The speakers were guilty of some major theological distortion, such as identifying the Palestinian people with Jesus on the cross. Though biblically erroneous, such an identification has been a powerful weapon of propaganda. One of the earlier speakers, Naeem Atik, had stated, quote, here in Palestine, Jesus is again walking the Via Dolorosa. Jesus is the powerless Palestinian humiliated at a checkpoint. In this season of Lent, it seems to many of us that Jesus is on the cross again with thousands of crucified Palestinians around him. The Israeli government crucifixion system is operating daily. Close quotes. The conference speakers believe that the occupation is sin, put that in quotes. They present a moral equivalence between radical Islam and the Israeli Defense Forces.
Christian Palestinianism is neither Christian, nor does it really help the cause of those who are identified as Palestinians. It encourages the use of these suffering people for the purpose of furthering the goals of Islamic radicalism in the Middle East.
That's today's Bible in the News report of Southwest Radio Ministries. To get a complimentary copy of the monthly publication, call 1-800-652-1144. Be here for our next Your Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report.